Hello, everyone. Welcome to All Things Episcopal, where we talk about anything and everything related to the Episcopal Church. This podcast was designed with younger folks in mind and as a space to learn more about the Christian faith with the Episcopal lens. So in traditionally Episcopalian greeting fashion, the Lord be with you.
Hey, friends. We are continuing our tender and meaningful conversation on death. And with that being said, if this topic is too tender for you or you're feeling a little sensitive to it, we encourage you first and foremost to care for your well-being. So please skip this episode of the podcast and know that it's okay. Please tune into the next one. Your health and wholeness is the most important thing. Today, we are joined with Sarah Lagergren, who is a member at Grace and Holy Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, and she is also a healthcare worker in Kansas City. Sarah, welcome to All Things Episcopal.
Thanks for having me, Clint.
If you would, tell us a little bit about your story, who you are, about your family, and any hobbies you have.
Yeah. So I was born and raised in Kansas City, Missouri. And my parents still live here. They're both retired. And my younger sister, Adrian, and her husband also live here. I'm married to my husband of nearly 10 years, Ryan Lagergren, and he's an attorney. And then I'm a pediatric cardiac advanced practice nurse and have been pediatric nursing since 2007. So going on 17 years. And then Blaine and I have two children. George is 8 years old and in second grade, and Freya, who's 5, and she's in kindergarten. And then for hobbies, as if working full-time and having two young children don't keep me busy enough, I do like to try to travel, either with family or one of my good friends and I try to take an annual trip every year. Just be generally active, spend time outside, and then something we are able to do more often is cook and share food with family and friends.
Oh, food is always good for the soul.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you can tell us a little bit about how you found the Episcopal Church and how long you've been a part of the Episcopal Church.
Sure. I kind of have a little bit different of a journey to the Episcopal Church. Maybe not. Maybe some people have shared background as I do. Back in high school, I actually volunteered with friends prepping food at the community kitchen that was a part of Grace and Holy Trinity Episcopal Church at the time. We have a different iteration of that, the cathedral now. It was different back then, and I would volunteer occasionally there. So I was familiar with the cathedral and church back in high school, never attended a service. As a child, I wasn't baptized, nor was I raised in a church community. I did attend a Lutheran school with my cousins, and then my cousins were part of a local Lutheran church. So in the summer, I would do, you know, Bible summer camp with my cousins for like a week. Did have some exposure to what it meant to be a Christian. Not having been raised in a church, I think felt a little intimidated and I don't want to say kind of an outcast maybe when I would attend church. Like I didn't really belong there. In high school, I did attend occasionally different services with friends who would invite me along. And some of these services, you know, I was told to stay at the pew when communion was received. And I didn't really understand what that meant. So again, that kind of just reinforced my feeling of kind of being on the outside looking in. So that's where I was all through my childhood in relation to the church. And then in college, I attended William Jewell, which at the time was affiliated with Southern Baptist. Actually, while I was at William College was when we decided to sever ties with the Southern Baptists and the Christian college, but not affiliated directly with them. And so I wasn't involved in any campus ministry activities, but about 50% of our student population was very involved in Christian groups and activities. Again, I was not really involved in any of that, kind of on the outside looking in. I did study abroad in Oxford, England, my junior year of college. And that was when I really had some exposure to what the Anglican Church, which is the Episcopal Church, is like. I did a few services and quickly found that Evensong, which was offered at the different colleges on different days of the week, was a really nice way for me to be able to sit and listen to the kind of beautiful singing and have some quiet time for reflection, and really serve as a way for me to start feeling comfortable in a church setting without any sort of formal services. So that's kind of my long ground, not being part of the church, but having some exposure. And then Blaine and I got married back in 2014. We had a civil service because there of us were an active member of a church. We did discuss when we started a family, we thought it would be important to find a church and raise our children in the church. And then you get busy as a young family. And so we didn't make it happen right away. And then COVID hit when my son George was like 4 and my daughter Rhea was 8 months. So we remained fairly isolated just because of my line of work as a pediatric nurse, grandparents take care of our young children. And so we didn't really find the church until the early fall of 2021. And that was because of my husband. He attended Grace Holy Trinity in middle school, high school with his mother. She was a member there. And he had an existential crisis, we'll put it, had a moment in the fall of 2021 where he felt like, you know, he should be happy and had all these joyful things in his life. And yet he didn't feel fulfilled and didn't really feel like a meaning to what his life was for him. So he kind of started searching and he ended up deciding I want to go back to church and start to attend. And so he did that probably October 2021. And November of 2021, his mother was diagnosed with lymphoma. And me being the less religious of the couple at the time, made a comment to him that it was kind of divine intervention that he had that existential crisis and that instead of having a midlife crisis, led him back to the church and provided him and ultimately all of us a lot of support during a trying time. His mother did pass away from lymphoma about 9 months later in August of 2022. And so during that time period, Blaine was reaffirmed in the church and our children were baptized in 2022. And then I needed an extra year to kind of feel that it was my decision and feel comfortable with what it meant to kind of accept Jesus as my savior and claim myself as a Christian and truly feel a part of the church community. So I was baptized Easter 2023. So just had my 1 year anniversary at Easter Vigil, which was very nice. That is how I came to the Episcopal Church as well as my other family members.
I love so much about your story because there's room for doubt and wonder and belonging, and it's all part of our story. And I do want to say I'm sorry that at various points that the church didn't make you feel welcome, because no one should ever feel excluded in the house of God. But I am glad that you found a sense of belonging and a sense of home in the Episcopal Church. Their loss is our gain.
Yes. And, you know, I think some of that might have been own insecurity as well, feeling like I had a lack of background knowledge and understanding. I am someone who who need that to feel comfortable and confident. So here we are.
So earlier you stated that you work in the healthcare field as a pediatric nurse, specific in the cardiology unit. I imagine you see a lot of healing and a lot of heartbreak. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about this and how you kind of find harmony and purpose in the tension between healing and heartbreak.
Well, I decided to become a nurse. I knew that I wanted to work with children. But being in pediatrics, for me, much more with the healing component than the heartbreak component, which I think has really helped me keep going the 17 years that I've been pediatric nurse. And I think that I'm fortunate to have come to a profession in which I not only excel at it due to my commitment and clinical knowledge, also because it really provides me with a lot of purpose. I'm able to be with children and their families during their most challenging moments. And more often than not, I'm able to witness them recover and know that they'll truly live full lives and be alive. But at times, that's not always the case. And I have been given the privilege to walk alongside them and support them when the journey leads them and they're called back to heaven.
Yeah. For so many people, when a significant loss has occurred, they begin to discern or wonder if God is really there in the midst of the grief and the pain and suffering and trauma of it all, which is completely natural and normal. I'm wondering if you've ever experienced this personally or professionally, and if so, what helped you have grace with yourself during that time to be patient with yourself and kind of care for yourself?
Yeah. Well, when I was able to see these questions beforehand, Claire knew that such a sensitive topic might need a little preparation. And so I discussed the question with my husband, Blaine, quite a bit because he has questioned the existence of God and what it means for others to suffer. I had never actually questioned that. And that's a hot topic of discussion between the two of us in terms of I always just sort of had faith and trusted in what God's journey is for each of us. And that while in the moment we might not know what we're going to get out of it, that's we are meant to be in this moment in time, and we'll see on the other side of it what growth we can experience. Professionally or personally, I have questioned the existence of God, especially you know, when I witness or experience grief, pain, suffering, trauma, understand why others do. But I've also never really been scared of death for myself, which I think might be something that plays into that. And what has changed my perspective is having children, my own children. I'm more scared of death, especially if that were to be premature. But that's a whole other podcast about what it means to be a parent. So mostly what's hard for me is when I am witnessing others suffer and who don't have kind of faith to fall back on, or even if they do. I just say that individual, whether it's my patient or child, family or friend, be kind of released from that pain and suffering either through recovery or from this world, and that the family be able to find comfort and closure and acceptance. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, you know, for me, being able to process my feelings with my husband and my coworkers in a non-judgmental way really helped me from burning out. When we do have a patient who passes on, there's a lot of different things people do. So yeah, I've kind of established some practices myself that keep me going.
Can you tell us a little bit more specifically about those practices? So you mentioned having a community of support that you can externally process with, but are there other ways that you process what you've just witnessed and experienced in the midst of life?
Yeah. Sometimes it's an acute, unexpected loss, and sometimes it's more of a planned redirection of care in the hospital. But either way, I think the institution that I work at and the departments that I work within are really good at taking the time to formally allow a caregiver to process it together and then to take the time to process it individually. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of thought pediatrics probably been at the forefront of more open and honest with the emotional toll that it takes to care for acutely ill children. But I also think COVID really changed how healthcare providers in general have been more open and honest about what it means for us to give so much of ourselves that we have to be able to pause and take a little back. And so it's much more acknowledged, embraced, that it actually feels brave to share the emotion and to cry together.
Yeah.
Instead of just carrying on, which I think used to be expectation. And we do have to carry on. You do have to come back and do the job. And sometimes that's within 5 minutes of a patient passing away. And sometimes you are able to take a little bit longer of a break. But we allow ourselves the time to grieve, to cry, to share. Then we oftentimes do a debrief, in which we come together and kind of have our own little celebration of life about the patient. And can talk about, you know, nice moment that we shared with the patient or with the family. And there are tears, but there's a lot of laughter too. And so those are really a nice way for us to honor that child's life. Sorry. Yeah.
Oh, no.
We share a space with one another.
Yeah. I love that you're talking about tears and laughter being welcomed into a space in the midst of heartbreak, because in our earlier episode, part one with Father James, he said that at the time of the ministration of death and the burial rite, they're services of healing. And it's a union of being made whole. And I can't think of anything more real and tangible than tears and laughter in one space where people are being formed in wholeness, both as the caregiver and a loved one who has just lost a loved one. So I think that there's so much beauty in what you just said about tears and laughter, because joy and suffering are not mutually exclusive to one another.
No, I mean, that's, you know, there's life and death, you know, they're the flip side of each other, just like, you know, tears and laughter are the flip side. And I do think they share the same space when bringing life into this world and you're allowing life to live this world.
Yeah.
And then I think for me personally, so I get a lot out of that group setting. That's not necessarily everybody's jam. Mm-hmm. Some people to be a lot more private with feelings and emotions, although I'm someone who always seeks others out, encourages them to participate. And we have these sort of briefs because I think they're an important way to provide closure and prevent burnout. Mm. But if I know that a patient's death is imminent, I do take time to kind of go say my goodbyes, just quietly with that patient. Sometimes the family is present, sometimes they are not. Either way is fine. And then sometimes I'm not able to do that. Either I'm not here physically at work or the child passed on before I have the opportunity to do it. And that happens. We have a nice chapel here within my institution, and I will go down and kind of take a few minutes to, you know, quietly reflect upon my experience with that child and that family. Mm. So,
yeah. So you just mentioned that when you need that space of quiet and intentionality, you'll go down to the chapel, whether it's a sudden loss or, you know, a challenging day or something of the sort, that is a spiritual practice for you, that you'll go down to the chapel. I'm curious, when you have a patient that you've been with for a while and you know that they're going to pass, is there any additional spiritual practice that you engage, like lighting a candle or a specific prayer that you say for that patient, either aloud or in the silence of your heart, that brings you peace knowing that they're no longer going to be on this side of heaven?
Yeah. I think, you know, just usually the quiet time to reflect in the chapel or just go spend a little time, you know, I'm sort of a physical touch person. And so I do love to just go hold that patient's hand and quietly speak to them in my mind.
Yeah. Physical touch, specifically hand holding, can do a lot for people to remind them that they're not alone.
And I think you share a lot through physical touch without needing to say words too.
Very true. Right. Very true.
It's a little flow between the spirits to get.
Yeah. So this might sound like a strange question, but I'm wondering if you can tell us if there's ever a moment of beauty that you find in death or passing. I'm thinking more along the lines of family leaning on one another, the hope you have for a loved one or a patient that they will enter into God's heavenly kingdom or, you know, something along those lines. Where do you see beauty?
I do think when the care team is able to recognize a patient will not make a recovery, and that we need to think about transitioning to kind of end of life care. I feel a lot of beauty in the care team working with family to honor their wishes and give them the time and space they need. It's just beautiful, really, to see what different families decide to do, different ceremonies that they have at the bedside, seeing final moments, holding their child, and singing.
Yeah.
And while it's sad, it's very beautiful.
Yeah.
And that brings, I think, everybody a lot of peace in the moment of saying, while we're here in the hospital, you can still allow for the death that you wait for.
Yeah. So you mentioned that you have young ones at home and that you work with young ones. This podcast in particular is designed for young people. So I'm wondering if there's something concerning death that you wish to share with young people, specifically about death and the complexities and, yeah. What would you like to share?
I was fortunate enough to, you know, hear Father James's answer to this question as well. And he answered it similarly to the way I am going to answer it. I think young people not be afraid of death, because death is not the end. It may be the end of our human life here as we know it. But I really feel that our soul will live on, and you know, humanity is part of our smaller purpose, presence in this greater world. And so people shouldn't try to outrun death or, you know, be afraid of it. While it can be overwhelming with emotion, and people would lead into it, because I think life feels more full when you are able to accept all aspects of it, which includes death.
Yeah. It's something that will happen to all of us, whether on our terms or not. It's complex. It's traumatic in some cases. It's also a beautiful end for some people. Yeah. And yeah, it's inevitable. It's inevitable.
It is.
So our final question for you is, what is something that brings you hope and joy in these days, in the midst of kind of a world in chaos, death, and loss?
So, you know, I think that it's really easy to get weighed down by the world and chaos and death and loss. Like I mentioned, my husband Wayne is always trying to tell whatever is happening in the news and this or that. And while I am interested, I'm always beyond my sphere of control, right? Because there's not a lot I can do about that. And internalizing that, feeling a lot of anxiety about it, isn't going to do anything for me or anyone else, right? So I choose instead to try to see the beauty and fullness of life, and hope that there is. And like I mentioned already, you can't have life without death. You can't have without loss, beauty without chaos, at least not in this world as we know it. And so while there are a lot of scary, chaotic, bad things that are happening in this world, you can take a step back and choose to look at the things, or even look at those things and find the hope or beauty within them. And so it's not easy to do, for sure.
Yeah.
But it's what gets me through my days. And I think if more people can hold on to the positivity, maybe we'll be less of that.
Yeah.
Chaos and death and destruction.
Yeah. See the good, pass it on.
Yeah.
Well, Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your story, your spirit with us, and sharing more about your ministry and caring for others, especially in their most vulnerable and tender moments. We need people like you. And I, for one, am grateful that I get to know you on a weekly basis and get to hear your stories. So thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Claire. Thanks for asking to share on this emotional topic. It was a good growing experience for me, and I hope that it, you know, brings something to light in others.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad it was meaningful. Hey, friends. One announcement for you. We are going to have a special episode coming up on creation care, and it will release just before Earth Day. So stay tuned for that. And we're going to have a really special guest with us for that episode. So stay tuned. And the Lord be with you.
Also with you.
All right.
Hey, friends. Thanks for listening. Please like and subscribe and leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts. To learn more about all things Episcopal, visit campusministry.diowestmo.org/allthingsepiscopal. All Things Episcopal podcast is a production of the Diocese of West Missouri in association with Resonant Media. The Lord be with you all.